2 weeks ago, there appeared in the Saturday Evening Post the results of an extensive Gallup poll on the attitudes of American young people towards their world, towards themselves, and towards society. The young people who were questioned were of both sexes, ranging in age from 14 through 22. High school sophomores and seniors, juniors and seniors from American colleges, and young adults under 23 who quit school and who are now in the labor force. The young people who were questioned were an accurate cross-section from all regions of the nation, from all kinds of family income, education, and occupation. The results of this poll revealed some very interesting and some very disconcerting things. To quote from the findings, the American youth is a pampered hothouse plant and likes it that way. He will settle for low success rather than risk high failure. He has little spirit of adventure. He wants very little because he has so much, and is unwilling to risk what he has. He is most unlikely to rebel or involve himself in crusades of any kind. He likes himself the way he is, and he likes things as they are. These are some of the findings by the authors of this Gallup poll. And they asked the question, how did our youth become so bland, so cautious, so self-satisfied, secure, and unambitious? The answer is found in some of the replies which they received from the young people themselves. One young man said, our parents led a tougher life. They fought a depression and a war, and they have protected us. They have made sure that we have more than they had. We are pampered. An Eastern College girl said simply, of course we are soft. We got too much too soon. There isn't much we want that our parents don't give us. A California high schooler says, goals? We've got no goals. Our parents have achieved them all for us. One is reminded of the account which is given in the Talmud of a rabbi who was wont to say, what labors Adam had to carry out before he obtained bread to eat. He plowed, he sowed, he reaped, he bound the sheaves, he threshed and winnowed and selected the ears. He ground them and he sifted the flour, he kneaded and baked, and then at last he ate. Whereas I get up and find all these things done for me. How many labors Adam had to carry out before he obtained a garment to wear. He had to shear and to wash the wool, comb it, and spin it, and weave it. And then at last he obtained a garment to wear. Whereas I get up and find all these things done for me. All kinds of craftsmen come early to the door of my house and arise in the morning and find all these things prepared before me. Who is to blame for the situation, for these attitudes of our young people? Certainly parents must share the blame, say the authors of the poll. Parents must share the blame. But there are other contributing factors, they say. The world is constantly confronted with overwhelming crises. Berlin, Laos, Cuba, Algeria, Tunisia, the Congo, South Vietnam. And our youth, unhardened in the crucible of struggle, might well turn inward to escape responsibility. One writer draws the following conclusion. We've got to teach our children to think, and you don't do this in front of TV. We have to make them excited about ideas. And we've got to convince them that there is nothing shameful in being different. I don't mean that they should be different just to attract attention. But they should know that every great person is different. That you can't do extraordinary things and be like everybody else. I was very much disconcerted in reading these findings, Gallup poll. Seemingly our young people believe, if the Gallup poll's conclusions are correct, that they have found security in lack of ambition, in conformity, in acceptance of the world as it is, in avoiding any responsibility for what is wrong in the world, and in shutting their eyes to all the political and social crises and upheavals which are all around them. And this, I am afraid, is false security. But it is based on false assumptions. This world of ours, which is being so drastically recast before our very eyes, will not permit anyone to withdraw to some carefree island of private security, where he will be safe from all of its rifts and its twists and its dislocations. No generation is free to decline its encounter with destiny. It is one thing to recognize the besetting dangers and resolve to go on in spite of them. It is quite another thing to fiddle while Rome is burning. In the former case, one may try to check the danger, to overcome the evils, to try to make the world secure by removing the causes of its insecurity. In the latter case, one will fiddle away until the flames engulf and consume him. If our world is ever to be made secure, in a sense, of course, no age was ever entirely secure, though none has been threatened with such total destruction as ours. If our world is ever to be made secure, it will not be achieved by men who have little spirit of adventure in them, who do not wish to involve themselves in any crusades, who like all things as they are. Such people are likely to bring about the fall of their own world. For the dynamics will then remain with the hungry people of the earth, those who are not satisfied and unambitious, who want many things because they have so few, who do not like things as they are, and who are willing to take every risk, actually no risk at all. For what have they to lose? There is a terrific drive, a flaming passion, a pent-up resentfulness and rebelliousness in the souls of the masses of the earth, the masses who have been burdened with the misery and the injustice of the centuries, and who have now begun to clamor, who have now begun to demand their own human birthright. And how will the more favored peoples of the world confront them? With what? Will a pampered, soft, spiritless, goalless generation be able to meet their furious challenge with blandness, with indifference, or simply by ignoring them? It should be clear, my friends, to everyone, that for many years to come, our world will be profoundly disturbed and unsettled. I read the other day an article by Mr. Walter Lippmann. Mr. Lippmann summed up the other day, and I believe quite accurately in his article, mankind's present predicament. He said, for as long a time as one can see into the future, we shall be living between war and peace, between a war that cannot be fought and a peace that cannot be achieved. The great issues which divide the world cannot be settled by a war that could be won and cannot be settled by a treaty that can be negotiated. I recall the words of the prophet Zechariah. Zechariah spoke of a time which he called Lo Yom, the Lo Loilo, not day and not night. The coming days will be full of frustration and confusion and alarms. The waves will run high, and the tides will be treacherous, and those who will have no stamina and no fighting spirit and no compass will go under. There will be very few smug and safe cubicles of refuge, cubicles of shelter for men who like themselves the way they are and who like things as they are. But my good friend, while insecure and uncertain, it will by no means be a hopeless world. Abounding in great risks, it will be rich and even greater rewards. There will be new horizons and new frontiers to challenge the adventuresome spirit of man, and especially of youth. In science and industry, in invention and discovery, in the arts and the humanities, progress will continue and will be unlimited. We are far from having reached the ultimate stage in the evolution of mankind. The 20th century is building a better and amplier world for man, and the 21st century will advance and improve it. There will be more of the good things of life for everyone. A society will emerge which will be free from the dark heritage of the past, the age-old curse of poverty, misery, and exploitation, of inequality and racialism and intolerance. It will be an exciting world. And for the men of courage and faith, a welcome and challenging world. And throughout the ages, such men of faith and courage have never been afraid to build their homes and plant their vineyards on the very slopes of volcanoes. It is told of Alexander the Great that he wept when, at the age of 30, he discovered that there were no more worlds for him to conquer. Alexander, I am afraid, would have wept if there were more worlds to conquer. One stops weeping only when he gives up the dream of conquest for the dream of mission and of service. Now, one of the chief functions of religion, my dear friends, has been and is to tell men what to put their trust in and what not to put their trust in. The word trust comes from the same root as the word true. In other words, it has been the function of religion to tell man what is true on which he can rely. In our search for security in life, there are many roads which are open to us. But most of these roads end in the wilderness. Religion has painted the way to the one road which will lead to the true goal which we seek. Unfortunately, most men ignore this road, for it is not an easy road. There are numerous things in which men ought not to trust. For those who trust in them unwittingly build their lives upon the foundations of shifting sand. One of the things which men should not trust, says the Bible, is power. Physical power. Physical force. Man's security should not be grounded in physical power. Man is often inclined to do just that. man individually and men collectively, that is nation, pin their hopes for security, for their survival, on their vast striking power, upon their powerful armies and navies and their air force, upon their atomic stockpiles. Our Bible cautions nations not to put their trust in armies, horses, and chariots. Ein ha-melech no-sha berach oil. A king is not saved by his great army. Gibor lo yinatzel berach koach. A warrior is not delivered by his great strength. Sheker hasus lichshua. The war horse is a vain hope for victory. Uberov chelo lo yimalet. By his great might, it cannot save. There are people who put their trust in power. There are people who put their trust in wealth, riches, money. Money is to be their strong, enduring fortress. Wealth will be the sure road which will lead them to happiness, to golden years, contentment, peace, happiness. The older people among you may recall how many people who put their trust in wealth were, by a sudden turn of fortune, left bereft, broken, utterly defenseless, desolate. Our Bible long ago admonished men, he who puts his faith in his wealth, that man will fall. Some people rely on power, others rely on wealth, others rely entirely upon themselves, of their own knowledge, their talents, their judgment. They are sufficient unto themselves. They do not feel the need of undergirding their lives by the support and the experience and the love and the affection of other men. They do not realize that most what a man is what others have invested in him. And these people, accordingly, lack both gratitude and humility. And here again our Bible admonishes us, Bo teach belibo. The man who trusts in his own mind, in himself alone, who kasil, he is a fool. Some people trust in power, in wealth, in themselves exclusively, and other people rely too much on other men. They make themselves too dependent on the support or the goodwill or the favor of others. And that too is a mistake. Because while some people are worthy of our trust, many are not. In times of trouble, when you most need them, they vanish. Relatives become as unstable as water. Our closest ones very often turn out to be very slender reeds upon which to lean. And therefore, the Bible again admonishes men, cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes flesh his arm. And so throughout, as you read its immortal pages and listen to its exalted teachings, the Bible admonishes us, put not your trust in power, in wealth, in yourself alone, or in other men. Do not lay the foundation of your life in swampland and in morass. Wherein then shall a man put his trust? On this, our Bible is crystal clear, positive, and abundantly assertive. B'tach, b'Adonai, v'aseh tov. B'tach, b'Adonai, trust in God, v'aseh tov, and do good. There are two parts to this formula, as you see. Trust in God and doing good. This formula was written, I suppose, some 2,500 years ago. And I believe if a man were to write a formula for human security today, I doubt whether he could write a better or a more comprehensive or constructive one. Trust, faith, emunah, bitachon. Faith, my friends, is not a luxury. It is a desperate need for men who are involved not only in great undertakings, in mighty enterprises, in tasks which try their very heart and reins, but in the everyday business of living. Faith is power. There are many forms of faith. But all other faiths are energized by the primary faith, the most fundamental. Faith in God, the author of the total scheme of things. No significant leap, no significant living, or undertaking, or adventure is possible without faith, without trust, without believing that your undertaking is not worthless. But it will lead to something worthwhile and good. Some years ago, Dr. Lowell of Harvard preached a baccalaureate sermon in which he said to the young men of his day who were about to go out into their world, a much quieter, more stable, more secure world by far than the world in which our young people of this generation are entering. Dr. Lowell of Harvard, who raised a generation and more of young men, many of them went forth to mold this nation. He said to them, by faith, Columbus sailed across the unknown waters, trusting to find land on the other side. By faith, the Pilgrim Fathers migrated to the New World, seeking a home for a free exercise of their religion. By faith, the frontiersmen penetrated deeper and deeper into the wilderness, until the whole continent was open to civilization. By faith, Washington endured the hardships of Valley Forge, that a new and independent nation might survive. By faith, the framers of the Constitution devised a form of government that this nation might be united, prosperous, and permanent. By faith, Lincoln persevered through the dark days of the Civil War that the unity of the nation might be preserved and slavery abolished. By faith, Fulton invented the steamboat and Morse the telegraph. By faith, Morton, yearning to reduce human suffering, relieved pain through anesthesia and made modern surgery possible. By faith, Dr. Carroll offered himself up for exposure and died to take away the scourge of the yellow fever. And what shall we say of others who by faith have planted industries, built railroads, made inventions and discoveries, added to knowledge, healed the sick, purified politics, improved social relations, of whom often the world was not worthy. No, my dear friends, faith is not a luxury. It is the very motive power of all that is creative in life. So what do we mean when we speak of faith in God and trust in Him? What do we really mean by that? Do we really mean merely the expression, the formal devotion to God? What do we mean when we speak of faith in God? The answer is found in the formula which I quoted before. B'tach Badonai, v'aseh tov, trust in God and do good. In the doing of good, we demonstrate our faith in the good God. In useful and well-intentioned action and activities and undertakings, we testify to our faith and trust in Him. Whatever our work in the world may be, if only we know it to be good, true, and honest, whatever our work may be, whatever our calling or occupation or our profession, just so we know it to be good, and true, and honest, then we know that it is also God's work. We can proceed confidently on our way. Your co-workers, co-workers of God who is eternal, who created His world to endure and to be inhabited. If our design for living, our total design for living, is to do something worthwhile, good, fine, noble, helpful, useful in the world, then our security rests within that very design. With every new undertaking of ours, there will come a new accession of power. Vikove Adonai Yachalifu Choach. Those who trust in the Lord renew their strength again and again. And such men are secure in themselves precisely because they do not rely entirely upon themselves or upon power or wealth or other men, but upon the God-approved integrity of their own work. That's where their security is. That's where their confidence is. They're doing God's work, God's will, in God's world, and none that put their trust in Him are ever desolate. This is their shield against every form of anxiety and apprehension. Honest, faithful work in the workshop of the world whose overseer is God. There will be always room in such lives for new and nourishing vision. For there is no limit to the good that a man can do in his world, no limit, regardless how narrow his assigned domain, and how seemingly circumscribed the sphere of his influence. No human being, my friends, not even the humblest, need go through life without some dream of splendor. No human being need go through life without some dream of splendor. Drabness comes into your life only when you feel that what you're doing has no meaning, no worth, no usefulness. But when you know that what you're doing, regardless of what you're doing, has purpose, is part of the overall scheme of living which is approved by God, then there must come inevitably a halo, a splendor, a beauty into your life. And so the wise man, my dear friends, will be thinking, really, will be thinking less about security and more about fulfillment. In seeking fulfillment, that is, in doing what we want to do and what we feel we ought to do, and in doing it to the best of our abilities, in doing what we want to do, what we feel we ought to do, and in doing it to the best of our abilities, we shall find life's deepest satisfactions and its highest compensation, and we shall not be afraid. Though the earth should change, as the psalmist puts it, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though the waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult, we shall not be afraid, for God will be our refuge and our strength, a very present help in time of trouble. I should like to conclude with a phrase which the famous poet Victor Hugo once wrote down. He was asked to summarize the philosophy of his life in a brief sentence. Summarize the philosophy of his life. What keeps him going? He lived in troubled times, in times of revolution, of upheaval. He was a fighter, a champion. He had to flee from his country because of the positions which he took. What kept him going? Where did he find his security in an insecure world? And so he wrote, "You say, where goest thou? I cannot tell, and still go on. If but the way is straight, I cannot go amiss. Before me lies dawn and the day, the night behind me, that suffices me. I break the bounds. I break the bounds, whatever bounds I find, I try to break them. I see and nothing more, believe and nothing less. My future? My future is not of my concern." Thus speaks a man of faith. Thus speak all men who want to find security in an unseen an insecure world. Trust in the Lord and do good.